morning.
Good morning.
A reading from the second letter of Paul to the Corinthians. Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of mercies and the God of all consolation, who consoles us in all our affliction, so that we may be able to console those who are in any affliction with the consolation with which we ourselves are consoled by God. For just as the sufferings of Christ are abundant for us, so also our consolation is abundant through Christ. If we are being afflicted, it is for your consolation and salvation. If we are being consoled, it is for your consolation, which you experience when you patiently endure the same sufferings that we are also suffering. Our hope for you is unshaken, for we know that as you share in our sufferings, so also you share in our consolation. The word of God for the people of God.
I've always worked to be an optimistic person. So from a young age, I've been taught to walk upright with a pep in your step, whether you're feeling pep or not. When people ask how I'm doing, I'll say, I'm great. And sometimes I'll add, and improving. I wanted to spread that optimism and positivity to my kids. So when they were young, sometimes if they were near me when the phone rang, I would answer it, hello, this is Michael, Alicia and Austin's proud father. I tried to find ways to be that optimistic, positive person. And even in doing so, I would wonder, why is it when I would face great challenges, I could become depressed or frustrated if I carried this belief that things could get better? And what I discovered is what I really wanted in life was not to be optimistic. What I really wanted in my life was to be a person filled with hope. And there is a big difference. Shane Lopez, who did considerable research on the topic of hope, said this about the difference between optimism and hope. He said, optimism is an attitude. It's that attitude that says you stay on the sunny side of life. You look at the glass half full. You look at the world through rose-colored glasses. It's not tied to any goal. It's not tied to any facts. It's just the general expectation that things will always get better. But hope, he says, is something different. Hope is the belief that things will get better and that through our decisions and actions, we can make it so. That's why if you're facing a difficult circumstances, you don't want an optimist with you, because they'll get frustrated when challenges come, because their world isn't tied to reality. But hope-filled people don't ignore the problems around us. They just find a way to see their way through them. Douglas John Hall said this about hope, and he was really asking a question about a hope that I think we all yearn to have. And here's what he asked. Have you a hope that doesn't have to lie about the hopeless things that are really present in our world today? Have you a hope that doesn't have to lie about the hopeless things that are really present in our lives today? Isn't that what we really want? To have the hope that helps us to face the things that are before us. And so today we're going to explore the foundation of that hope, the source of that hope, so that we can be hope-filled people, not just optimistic people. Now, in this text, Paul is addressing people who are on the precipice of moving from hope to feeling hopeless and helpless, which is even worse. Hopeless means you're wondering how you're going to find your way through, and helpless means you look around and there's no one who cares, and you begin to believe there is no way through this. And so Paul is writing to the Corinthians. Now, Paul lived after the time of Jesus' life, And the Christian community is expanding, and either in person or through letters, he's trying to help them find their way and become this community. And in Corinth, they're struggling, they're suffering. And he's writing to people who are losing hope and becoming helpless. And in the span of these few short verses, it's interesting, he uses a word 10 times in some variation that means to console or comfort or encourage. And the very word that he uses is the word that is used to describe God's Spirit, God's presence in our lives. And that word means the Comforter. So what is it in this consolation? What is it in this comfort? What is it that encourages us to be able to begin to have hope again? And I believe it's this: the recognition that we are not alone. Did you ever notice when you face a great challenge that if you ever feel you're alone, it feels insurmountable? That you'll never find your way through? And sometimes it's just having someone come by your side that's just enough to fill you with hope that you can find your way through. I was thinking about this when I was young. Now, kids, do you have a place that you're afraid to go? Dark hallway, dark room, dark place in the city? For me growing up, it was the basement. I was deathly afraid of our basement. Now, in my defense, I need to share a couple things. One is I was traumatized by our neighbor, Roy, who had the spiritual gift of being curmudgeonly. And he had this little hole that went down, a window really, that went down to his basement, and he used to cut wood and put it through the window and store it up to burn it in the winter. And we would go over and want to look through that window, and he told us that the boogeyman was there. And so we never went near that window again, but I think that started my fear of basements. And so when we moved to a farmhouse with a basement, it was one of those damp old basements with a low ceiling, also with a crawl space, and it's where we kept our freezer and our washer and dryer. And sometimes when I was home alone, I have to go down to change a load or get something out of the freezer. I was so afraid. So you know what I did? And I'm not proud to admit this. I would pretend somebody was with me. So before I'd go down the stairs, I would stop and chat like I had a friend present with me. Yeah, Bill, great. Yeah, you stay right here. I just need to run down in the basement a minute. Or worse yet, and this is true, I would pretend I had a dog named Killer. I would make the bark sounds and the growl sound. I'd say, down, Killer, down, stay, stay. And then I would go down to the basement. True. I'm not sure it really helped, but it got me down there. But there's something about knowing that someone's with you. We desperately crave it, to have that hope that we can make it through. A few months ago, there was an article written by Jonathan Merritt. He's an award-winning journalist who covers religion. He's a young man, and he was writing about a struggle he faced. He began to develop pain in his hands, which he was concerned about because it made it difficult to type, and he makes his living typing and writing. And the pain spread to his arms and his neck and his head and his back and his body and his legs. And then he started having panic attacks, and he broke out in shingles, and he was just debilitated. And before you know it, he's seeing a slew of doctors of every kind and psychologists, and he's been prescribed medication for his pain and medication for his anxiety, and he's withdrawing from life because of the pain that he's carrying. And then he came across a doctor who thought there's a connection between what we face physically and what's going on within us psychologically. And he was hesitant to go, but he went. And when he visited the doctor said, I think you need to see a therapist, which he did not want to do. But he was so desperate, he gave it a shot. And so he goes to the therapist, and as he's sitting with her, very soon he finds himself weeping. And through the sessions that he had with her, he'd find himself crying, and through the tears, telling about how he grew up in a Christian home, very conservative one, that taught, if you're suffering like this, it's because of your sin. You did something wrong. You deserve this. He grew up in a home that said, you have to be perfect to love and follow all the rules, and life won't go well if you're not doing that. And even though he was older, and intellectually he knew that wasn't the case, he carried this burden within him. He told a therapist about how an older boy in the neighborhood had abused him. He told about his struggles with intimacy. And finally, the therapist said, I think you need to start meditating. And again, he didn't want to do this. What does that have to do with anything? And then he remembered, as he began to reconnect with his faith, which he had abandoned, That, you know, the Christian tradition has this thing called contemplative prayer. It's not about bringing a laundry list of requests to God. It's about just stepping back and inviting God into your life, all of your life, including those places of pain, to work through it. And so he began to do that. And as he did, he says he began to feel the sense of this loving presence. And as he continued to do it, the pain began to subside. And he's doing so much better now. And here's what he said about the experience. He said, "I learned how to pray again. I learned that, like everyone else, I experienced hard things growing up, but that those things do not have to rule my life today. I learned to accept myself as I am, and that I don't have to be perfect to be loved. God is perfect, not me. And God, I learned in the most important lesson of all, is always there, always loving, always beside me." For him, the healing began when he realized he was not alone. Now, he does not offer this as a cure for all chronic pain, nor do I offer it as this is the way that's going to heal all our woes. But there's something about knowing that we are not alone that allows us to begin to have hope again so that we can move forward in life. Now, I know that there are people here who may say, "I've tried. I come to this place to worship. I've tried prayer. I've tried believing that I'm not alone, that God is somehow with me, but I'm just not feeling it. I don't feel that presence. I don't feel that hope." And Paul says something very important in this text. It's in verse 4. And basically, Paul says this, is that we can go through some very difficult times and God will console us, comfort us, be present with us so that we know we're not alone. And then somehow God puts us beside someone else who's struggling and suffering, and they can feel that same comfort, that same encouragement that God gave us because we're with them. In other words, we can lend our hope to other people. Or to state it another way, we can borrow hope from others when we struggle to find hope on our own. Now, Shane Lopez, who I mentioned earlier, when he works with people who are struggling to find hope, to find their way forward, he has some questions he asks them. And one of the questions he asks, one of the first questions he asks is this: who makes you feel like you matter? Who makes you feel like you matter? It could be a spouse or a friend or a family member or a child or a colleague, or it could be someone who's passed away that's no longer with us. And if it's someone that's still with us, he encourages them, contact that person. Contact the person who makes you feel like you matter. And if it's someone who's passed away, get a photo. Spend some time thinking about that person. Draw strength and hope from their lives. When I think about that, there's so many people I could point to, my parents and my wife and my children, but the person who comes to mind, who's no longer with us, is my great-grandmother. Now, I told you about her last year. To remind you, she's the one who we had this close relationship, met Tina, fell in love with Tina, maybe a little quicker than I did. And we're at my sister's wedding, and there you throw the bouquet and you shoot the gardener, and whoever catches those things gets married next. I don't know who caught the gardener, but she went over, ripped it out of that person's hands, walked it up to me, and said, "I will not die until you marry that woman." That's the story. And we did get married, and just a few months later, she passed away. Now, there was something about her. I didn't see her that often. We were in Michigan, she lived in Iowa, but it was the way she lived. She had lost two husbands, lived through the Depression, faced great hardship, but she was so hope-filled. Her faith showed her that there was always a way through. And the way she looked at me and talked to me filled me with that same hope. I borrowed hope from her when I didn't have it myself. We need to recognize that as a community of faith, we have hope that we can lend to people when they have no hope within them, if we walk alongside them and seek to comfort them and console them and encourage them. In fact, Marble has been a beacon of hope for decades. It's this place of hope for people. People come through these doors broken and beat up. They come hurting in need of healing. And they're in such a difficult place that they feel like there is no way forward for me and I have no hope within me. But something miraculous happens. They get around people like you who have suffered and been consoled and have God be with you, which allows you to walk alongside of them and they can bower your hope until they begin to be filled with their own. That is a powerful thing. I think in the midst of all of this, Paul is saying to us, that you are not defined by your present circumstances, as dire as they may seem, nor are you confined to who you can become. You can be so much more, and the key is hope. Now, I know it can be hard for us because we feel there's so many things that have been put on us that do define us and weigh us down. Paul is writing to people who have had stuff put on them. They've been told you're suffering because you've sinned. You're suffering because you've messed up. You're suffering because you're nobodies. You're suffering because you come from the wrong family. You're suffering because it's your fate. And they can't see their worth anymore. I read an interesting article about a statue in New Iberia, Louisiana. Anybody from Louisiana? A few. Apparently, in New Iberia, there was a statue of the Emperor Hadrian in front of the bank. Now, as you can imagine, it was also the place where many pranks were played. That over the years, on Saturday nights, people would come by and place a beer can in Hadrian's hand, or a plastic lei, or sunglasses, or crazy hats. And it was getting to happen with increasing frequency, so the bank decided, you know what? We probably need to up our insurance, so that's have an appraisal done and make sure everything's in place in case we have vandalism, which included appraising the statue. It turns out the statue was from ancient Greece, 2,000 years old, worth $1 million. They had no idea. They've since sold it, by the way. The bank cashed in on this. But all this time while people are placing these things on top of the statue, they had no idea what it was worth. And so for all of us here today, we need to know that no matter what's been placed on us or we placed on ourselves, we have infinite worth. You're in a place that can see beyond that within you. That's why I'm so glad that today we're launching the Ribbons on the Fence, which is Suicide Prevention Awareness. And it's launching this next week, which is National Suicide Prevention Awareness Week. Suicide or death by suicide has increased by 33% in the last 20 years. It's the third leading cause of death for those 10 to 14, second leading cause of death for those 15 to 24. And what's so sad about this is there's such stigma attached to that. If people have ideas about it or have lost someone to it or have depression, they feel like if I talk to anyone about this, I will be defined by this forever. And we want people to know that this is a safe place. There will be no stigma attached. We can see past where you are to where you can be. And so for all of us here today, we need to remember, for us, for those we see, that we are not defined by our present circumstances, no matter how dire they are, nor are we confined to who we can become. Because we are hope-filled people, we can see the problems that are before us and know that through faith, God will help us find a way through. May it be so for all of us. Amen.